welcome to Viva Politics Podcast, a podcast about the intersection of politics, media, and pop culture. It's hosted by me, a Generation Xer, Dr. Laura Barberena, and...
And me, Lauren Coronado, the Viva Politics Office Millennial.
We often sit around talking about things... about politics and media and the way things have changed from my generation to your generation.
Yes.
And I'm excited about being able to share our conversations with a larger audience. But since this is our first podcast, I kind of want to do just like a little brief introduction. So who the heck are we, right? So if people would be listening for the first time, want to know who we are. So I'm a Democratic political veteran operative. But I've been working in politics for over 20 years and just really... am intrigued by how we communicate politics for civic engagement. I have a PhD in communication studies from UT Austin and love how we take academic studies, apply it to the real world, and how that kind of plays out in everything from campaigns to issue advertising to social media. So that's kind of who I am.
And I am a graduate of the University of Texas at San Antonio. I have a degree in English, and I minored in politics, and I wasn't quite sure how I was ever going to use both of those together. I was just interested. And then I met Laura, and...
Here we are.
Here we are.
Wonderful.
Actually using my English degree.
Yes. And today we're going to be talking about us throughout... Our podcast will be talking about a series of different issues, but today's topic, we're going to talk about how the media sets the agenda. And we've been talking about this in the context of the way this kind of came up in our conversation was a local mayoral election and how sort of what topics that people were talking about with respect to that mayoral race. Why were some topics being talked about and others weren't?
Especially topics that seemed more important and relevant than what was actually being talked about and kind of why that is.
Yeah, and I think we can be pretty open about what those were, if you'd like to.
So one of the mayoral candidates is currently... I guess has allegations against him of domestic violence against his spouse and a past spouse. And the media just, they pushed the story but the public just didn't quite grasp onto it because there were bigger stories that the local media and state media were covering.
Such as Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A, which was being framed as religious liberty.
Right. And the Chick-fil-A, just for folks who are listening who may not be from the San Antonio area, just very quickly, the San Antonio City Council voted on the airport contract concessions. It was a concessions contract, actually. And one of the council members requested that Chick-fil-A not be placed on the winning bidding contract because of their practices with the LGBTQ community, and they're wanting to... The funds that they were providing, which were essentially anti-LGBTQ. And this sort of got traction and became a big story in the initial mayoral election. We began having conversations about, you know, the media and how the media sets the agenda for these kinds of important issues.
Why are they choosing to blow up a airport restaurant over domestic violence allegations against a mayoral candidate?
Right. And, you know, I mentioned early on here that I have a PhD in comm studies. And one of the theories that we studied as part of my academic studies was it's a theory called agenda setting. And Maxwell McCombs and Donald Shaw were the two academics who kind of came up with this concept. And they published it in the early 70s. And at the time, it was, you know, quite radical, in fact. And they basically... We're saying that the media plays a role in setting the agenda, being that the way they present the news, so in the case of a TV station, if it's at the top of the news, if they even cover it at all, in the case of a newspaper, if it's on the front page or the back page, it's a way to cue audiences that this is an important issue to you. And so what they did was they actually did a survey where they kind of surveyed folks and said, what's the most important issue to you? And they found that there was a correlation in sort of where the articles were placed on newspapers with people's opinions. So it clearly showed that there was a relationship between the way what people thought was important and the fact that the media was covering it. So when we talk about this, the issue in this case of the mayoral race of domestic violence versus Chick-fil-A, as long as the newspaper or the TV stations were covering Chick-fil-A, the perception in the public was that that was an important issue.
And the way that they're covering it, too. So they can put their own context and frame the issue how they want, and that'll trickle down into the general public's opinion.
Right. But then we saw, as we moved into the runoff election, a lot of private groups, it was and organizations and people involved in domestic violence began sort of speaking up and having press conferences and news releases, sort of forcing the media to cover the story, and thereby putting it
elbowing
on the agenda.
Their way into the agenda.
Yeah. Yeah. So it sort of changed as we moved into the runoff election. It really changed the dynamic of the agenda as we saw more and more coverage around the domestic violence rather than the Chick-fil-A. But I think that this really speaks to And that we need to be very conscious of the way that we consume media, because media's changed. When this study was done back in the 1970s, yeah, there was no such thing as Facebook, yeah, or Instagram or Snapchat, for that matter.
I don't think I've held a physical newspaper in quite a while.
Right. That's because you're a millennial and I'm a Generation Xer, right? But it's interesting because now we do have other means, like social media, that can help set the agenda. But the question is, you know, are these social media, do they set the agenda in the same way that TV and newspaper did back in the day?
Yeah. I don't think so. I think social media definitely opens the box for kind of stories to go rogue, for things that usually wouldn't get picked up to get picked up, things that might not matter in the grander scheme of things to become like a focal point of talking of politics and issues. And so social media definitely created a path for stories to go rogue. They might not have stayed in the traditional media context of things. It allows people to add their own commentary onto it as well. So you're getting other dialogues, and that also will play into the agenda, and it kind of will loop back around into how traditional media is framing stories based on what's trending on social media.
Right. So before, you know, you would rely on press conferences or, you know, groups to help the media focus in on stories, and now they actually watch social media to see which stories are trending. Mm-hmm. So social media can actually help set the news agenda.
Yeah.
So now it's kind of this kind of crazy feedback loop that never really existed before,
yeah,
in the 1970s when this study was done. So it'd be really interesting to find out, like, can social media then set the agenda for television and newspaper? And newspaper and television now have their own social media as well, right?
Yeah, that's a really good point. They have kind of got into that market and created a space for themselves to keep setting the grander agenda.
Yeah. And then we have what we call sort of influentials, people who help push public opinion. In fact, I was reading in the newspaper today that Instagram, mm-hmm, is going to allow for more influential, they're going to call it some kind of cross promotion, essentially, mm-hmm, that they're going to be allowing more of those feeds organically in people's Instagram. So they won't pop up necessarily as like an Instagram ad, mm-hmm, but they're going to allow for these, what they're called, like partnerships, where they're taking, say, a brand like Nike or something will have an influential promote that brand.
Yeah, sponsored posts.
Yeah, so there's sort of these sponsored posts, and they're going to be delivering much more of those on Instagram because they've realized that these kind of cross promotions are so much more effective.
Successful, yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's interesting. And then, you know, talking about the news
cycle.
I've bought
things from posts like that, so yeah, it works.
It works. Well, and then going back to the news cycle of the 1970s when this study was first done, you know, and at that time, frankly, newspapers were maybe two publications a day because they had a morning and an afternoon edition. And then
a day?
Well, sometimes it was just one. But some papers actually had like an afternoon edition, if you can believe it. And then it was just, you know, television, your three major networks.
Yeah.
Now we have 24-hour news cycle. We have, you know, CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, where we're constantly being, yeah, bombarded with the news.
And even then, off of basic cable, you have shows on HBO, shows on Netflix, shows on Instagram TV. Like,
right, yeah. Right. Oh, you know, and that, so I was hearing about this, talking about pop culture, and I always wonder, like, at what point will we kind of see these things creep into the world of politics? But these,
I think it already is.
Yeah, right. They already are. It right. Is. But they're like these shows that are done with characters, and they do it through like Facebook posts.
Yeah.
And so it's actually you're following a story and a narrative. But it's done through Facebook posts, mm-hmm. and done real time. So you'll get involved with a certain group of characters, and the characters will post, and you're sort of in their little social media world, mm-hmm. And things happen, and it's, you know, your typical, you know, teenage love story, whatever. But
I was like, what are you watching, Lotus?
No, I know, right? It's like, yeah. But so anyway, but they're taking, you know, these social media and the way we interact in social media and adopting it into the way that we tell stories. So yeah. No longer do we have sort of a linear story like Netflix where you go on and you push play and you watch the show.
Yeah.
This is actually you sort of follow these people on Facebook. Like they post when they post.
Reality TV, yes. Without even the production or...
Yes, it's like reality TV a la Facebook, a la Instagram. And then if you miss them, you can like sign up for a service where then you can like watch it, in, you know, like back to back to back to back. So, but the idea is that you're consuming it in real time, kind of like
so like a live vlog situation.
Yeah, but it's a story. It's not real.
Yeah,
so like the TV show, I don't know if you remember that TV show 24. Remember that TV show 24? Oh
no.
My god, this is like so sad. You such a millennial.
What's it about?
So it's kind of like it's about saving the world, of course.
What great TV
show is it? But it's the idea is that it's supposed to take place in a 24-hour period, and each episode is an hour long, and it's supposed to be done in real time. So presumably what's happening is, like, we're not moving fast backwards or forward in time. It's the actual clock. So you have actual 24 hours for which this, and it's a series, right? So that's kind of what they're borrowing. It's kind of like a real-time Facebook. People really exist out there, even though they really don't. And they're posting. But I wonder how, like, politics might adopt that. I mean, we did see Beto.
Yeah, I was about O'Rourke. To say, that sounds like the Beto live feed of his campaign, which was, it was good to watch sometimes.
Yeah, did you?
Especially when he was in town, we'd be like, okay, where is he?
You can find Beto by going to his Facebook feed,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, and we did that, actually.
He's at the library.
Run to the library to find Beto. But that's interesting. You know, so Beto is one of the politicians who's adapted this social media in a way that is...
And used it very successfully.
Yeah, almost clairvoyant-ish,
yeah.
Right? So it's like, oh, I wonder what Beto's doing. Let's just go on the live feed and see what he's doing. Which is kind of like...
Beto's live feed and AOC's Twitter and...
Yeah.
Definitely setting the agenda.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing about social media and Facebook and Twitter, and you mentioned it earlier, is that people can actually make their own commentaries on stuff. So where... And I think news stations actually watch this, right? So they looked. So let's say that a newspaper posts an article. So they're going to look to see how many likes the article got, how many mm-hmm. comments, what kind of engagement it's getting. And in their mind, the more engagement there is, you know, the more eyeballs, therefore the more successful the article is, right? Mm-hmm. And it's funny because there used to be a time before social media where... you know, people would write letters to the editor, right? So can you imagine the lag times? It was like, you know, you read an article and you didn't like it, so you would write your letter to the editor, right? Okay. Now it's like instantaneous,
yeah.
Right?
Now you just tweet them, be like, hey, that kind of sucked.
But what do you think is the, like, is there a negative outcome of being able to do that? Or do you think that's a good thing that we can speak almost immediately and directly back to the newspaper or TV station, for that matter, to give your opinion? Do you think that's a good thing, or do you think the old way back when I was a Generation Xer, how we...
I think it's good and bad. I think that the real-time interaction allows them to see what kind of content we want. So they're obviously going to start writing stories about what we want and what we're saying because they need to sell. They need to sell subscriptions, they need to sell papers, whatever they're selling. That's the end goal, ultimately, of media, is to make money.
But I wonder if that kind of skews the numbers, right? So, like, when we think about movies and who goes to the movies, we all know that movies are being created and marketed toward young people because they're the ones who go to the movies, right? So, in essence, you're creating content for the existing market. Mm-hmm. So, when I think about social media, it's like, we are sort of self-selected on who goes onto social media. And those stories then begin to focus in on those people who are on social media and watch those, which I tend to think might be sort of a little bit younger. When I think about my mom and dad don't read the newspaper online. They actually physically read the paper. So their voice in terms of attributing of a story is good or not, if we're talking about clicks, they're going to be left out of that conversation because they're not on social. So I wonder, like, to what extent the simple media itself is skewing the kinds of stories that should be focused in on or not focused in on just based on who is participating in that particular area. So, for instance, going back to what we were speaking at the top of the podcast about the mayoral election and Chick-fil-A, obviously, the Chick-fil-A story got a lot of social media interaction, and therefore, it kept getting looped back into the news because people were reacting to it in a real visceral way, right? Like, whether it was LGBTQ, whether you were because of religious freedom, whether you were because, why the hell are we talking about this when we got more important things to be talking about, whatever it was that you were, there was something about the Chick-fil-A story that just brought out a visceral
it had
reaction.
Issues from people on both sides, and then it didn't help that high-level state elected officials took it to the Capitol and made it an issue and kind of put San Antonio in the focus of that, especially right before our municipal elections. So our municipal elections for the council members and the mayor that were involved in that issue, it kind of became the center of their campaigns because the media had set that agenda. Whether they were planning on talking about streets or not, they ended up talking about Chick-fil-A instead.
Do you think that, I was kind of touching upon this a minute ago, but do you think that the media can set different agendas for different generations? So, like, do you think, like, my generation, Generation X, would come away with a different media agenda than, say, your generation, millennials, based on our media consumption?
Yeah, I think we're on different platforms. We're in different content creators we're getting our information from, and that will all impact what we're seeing. And
Like, when I think about millennials and what's important, we know that millennials don't vote in higher numbers, and there's a variety of reasons why.
But
that
young
is
people
the case.
Have never voted. That's the thing.
That's
it's
right.
Not a millennial specific issue. People in this age range that millennials are in now have just never voted. So it's not, it's kind of annoying that people are like, millennials don't vote. Like, well, you didn't vote either when you were 23.
Right. But now that we have social media and the ability to connect with people, do you think there's an opportunity now to get millennials more civically engaged?
Oh, absolutely. And we're seeing that everywhere.
Yeah?
Yeah. We just care. It makes you care. It puts the horror, like the horrific things of our society in your face. There's pictures, there's videos, and the media has more ways to share those. Like, it's not, maybe things weren't shown before because it's not polite to have, like, the trash ocean on your TV at 6 o'clock, but if you're scrolling through Twitter and 3,000 people are posting about it, then you see all of this feed, and how can you not do something about it?
Well, and I wonder too, like, Twitter is it is so news-centric, and when we talk about, setting the agenda, they have these things called hashtags, right, which will show, like, you can actually go onto Twitter and see what's trending based on a hashtag. So when we talk about
that's so funny,
like, the agenda,
I don't like
setting,
to use hashtags, but I like it when other people use them.
But the hashtags really, we talk about, like, modern day agenda setting, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is not 1972. This is now, 2019. And agenda setting, I mean, literally, if you did a hashtag search you could see sort of what's trending, what are people interested in. Mm-hmm. And it would be real interesting to do like a study that said, you know, calling up people and say, what's the most important issue to you, and see how that corresponds to hashtags, right?
Yeah.
Because before it was, the study was based on what's important to you versus what's on the news. Now we have these other cues, shortcuts that tell us what's important to us in these different
hashtags.
And
even on social media, people will tag news stations. Like if there's a horrific accident or there's videos of an injustice or someone being racist, like people will start to tag their local news station in it so that the story will get picked up.
But is there a way then for someone to manipulate based on this? Like is there ways to manipulate these hashtags and make these things more important than they really are? Like, frankly, like, you know, hashtag Kim Kardashian's new dress, like, why do I care about that? But it seems like, oh, that's trending, so now suddenly I need to, that needs to be important to me. And so it just seems like we could be easily manipulated by the hashtags. Do you know what I'm saying?
I would agree with that. I think there has been like a kind of disconnect from human interest to like news. I mean, human interests are news, but not in the same way that like what's going on in the world, you need to know how this is impacting your life news. And there's kind of that disconnect between human interest, and we're starting to see it just all mesh together.
Well, I think about like,
and it's devaluating.
Yeah.
News.
Right. Well, and I think about like the infamous Starbucks cup in the Game of Thrones episode. Like, you know, that thing was hashtagging for probably days. But, you know, and that's happening in the midst of like world atrocities, but yet it we're driving because of the influence of pop culture and all this, like we're able to drive people's agenda about Starbucks. And you know, and I also kind of feel like, frankly, between you and me, I kind of think it was done on purpose. Like I think it was a cross promotion, because I think totally could fix that in post-production. But I kind of feel like they someone at Starbucks said, I have this great idea, let's accidentally leave a cup and shoot with it, that way people go. And because I mean, everybody's talking about Starbucks.
And then it wasn't even a Starbucks cup, they said it was just like a generic coffee cup from the coffee cart.
What?
Yeah, but everyone was talking about Starbucks because if you have a paper cup, it must be Starbucks.
My conspiracy theory that Starbucks planned it all is wrong.
It's wrong, but it still got people talking about Starbucks.
But it got people talking about Starbucks and this whole cross promotion. And I bet you Starbucks sales probably tripled that week, which is actually would be interesting to find out if they did. But I do think it's interesting how these hashtags can bring our attention to things, because of what's trending, what everybody else is looking at.
Yeah.
And that's why I think as sort of civically engaged minded people, that we have to be more diligent about and not be so lazy about what we want to go look and read. Because if we just, I mean, we're busy. And so it's just easy to go.
No, you're right. And like talking about the Game of Thrones Starbucks thing, I don't remember what was in the real news that week, but I remember the Starbucks cup from that week.
Right. But it's just like, it's so easy to just go to the hashtags because we're busy, we don't have time. Like, you know, I get up every day and I read the paper, and it takes me an hour to just read the paper.
Yeah.
And you know, who has that kind of
time?
That's
so funny, because I subscribe to like the newsletters from the Express News here in San Antonio and a couple of our local nonprofit news organizations. And I just kind of skim through those and then skim through social media and like, okay, that's good enough.
Yeah, and I read every
you
single
read the whole
article.
Paper every morning.
But I do include the funnies, because the funnies kind of keep me going. It makes my day, like, okay. So I'm able to deal with life.
You got to get the funnies.
I got to get the funnies in. But but anyway. Well, I'm so glad we had this conversation, and I hope that we can continue having these conversations about
I have one more question.
Wait, sorry. Stop that.
What? Do you think that it's dangerous that anyone can be a pundit?
Oh my goodness. You know, yes, anyone can be a pundit. And that makes things a little...
What's his face from InfoWars and Tommy Lauren types and...
Yeah, it does make things very scary that anyone can be a pundit. And it's part of, I think, also when we talk about the 24 news cycle, I think it's a product of that, because they have to have content.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, who are you going to put on the air at 2 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah.
Let's face it. So, you know, they're grabbing people. Anyone can essentially be a pundit. And for that matter, anyone can be a political consultant, which we kind of joke around about a lot too. Because you really don't, there are no qualifications. There are no certifications. There's nothing.
Get yourself a name tag and you're good to go.
Your business card and boom, I am a political consultant. Or business card, boom, I am a political pundit. And I think that also... Yeah, I think there are some news stations that still try to have mm-hmm. people who are articulate and who, you know, understand issues from a nonpartisan perspective mm-hmm. And try to be a little more academic or, you know, grandiose, for lack of a better word, but to really kind of have a robust conversation rather than yelling at each other. The problem is that yelling at each other is entertainment, and that's what people end up watching. So as a result, the pundits that we get on TV not only are unqualified, but they tend to like yell and scream about things that they really don't know about, and then people watch them. So I kind of got
things that are outrageous so that people will watch them.
Yeah, let me say something really crazy, and then that way people can watch it.
Since they're included in the media and they're setting the agenda, they start to set agendas of hate and how that spills back into politics.
Right, right. And we've seen that quite a bit. In fact, I thought I would adapt a fake English accent and go on TV as a pundit, because it just seemed like at one point it was like all these English accent pundits on TV. I'm like, where do these people come from? That just makes no sense to me. But so it just really doesn't require any type of... I mean, we do see TV stations a lot of news stations, 24-hour news channels bringing reporters. So you see a lot of reporters on these TV stations now, or these news channels. And I think it's kind of interesting, right? So now we're talking about another loop, right?
Yeah.
So they may be writers for the Washington Post.
Yeah.
And so they write their story, and then they come on MSNBC or CNN or Fox News, and they talk about the article that they've written in the newspaper. And so I think at one point they used to call this sort of like the echo chamber, right? Where you're like echoing your message, echoing this article. And the problem is that today, because there was so much more competition in the news media, because of social media,
there's so many more platforms, and that gave more people, more pundits, more reporters, more whatever, because they have more outlets to publish on.
Right, and so you have to break through the clutter to be able to get your story read, mm-hmm. for people to like it. It's all sort of
going viral.
Yeah, yeah. So I do think it's time to revisit this theory, communication theory of social agenda, of setting the agenda. Because there's so many other factors that are working to setting, you know, the public agenda. What is the most important thing to you? What does that mean? And I guess that's kind of what I would leave with our listeners is, when you think about what's the most important thing to you today, how are you coming about coming to that determination, right?
The media tell you that's what you cared about today?
Is it a story that you read about on Facebook?
Yeah.
And by the way, that story could have been an ad.
Don't get your news on Facebook. Yeah.
And that story could have been an ad, by the way. So how are we today determining what's the most important thing to us? And is it, again, in this new social media thing, I say new because I was at a time when it didn't exist, but, you know.
Middle school.
Okay. Well, like, you know, what's important to your friends, too, right? So you see your friends post articles, or you see your friends like certain things. And so if that's important to your friend or your mom or your cousin, maybe that should be important to me as well. So social media exposes us not only to the agendas that are being set out there for whatever reasons, political, advertising, etc. We're also exposed to the agendas of our close friends and family and people that we choose to follow on Facebook. And that can also affect what we think is important.
So or how we think of those people, too, sometimes.
Oh, good point.
I've unfriended some people. I'm like, oh, my God, how could you think that?
And that's so funny because I rarely unfriend people. I don't, like, I get scared about unfriending people.
Get that negativity out of my life. Random people from high school. No.
Thank you again for listening to the very first podcast of Viva Politics. a podcast about the intersection of politics, media, and pop culture, hosted by me, Generation Xer, veteran political consultant Dr. Laura Barberena, and
me, Lauren Coronado, the Viva Politics Office Millennial. Be sure to follow us on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Viva Politics, and tag us. Send us your ideas of things you want to hear us talk about, and we look forward to next week.